Usually when you build a business, you think about the foundation.
Right.
You lay the bricks, you hire your team, you launch your product. And there's this comforting assumption that if your foundation is solid and you personally do everything right, well, your building is going to stand.
Yeah, you assume you're safe.
Exactly. But what happens when you suddenly realize that the structural integrity of your building doesn't just depend on your foundation? What if it depends on, like, the plumbing in a totally different
A
building?
building 3 blocks away.
Yes. Managed by an independent contractor you barely ever see. You do everything perfectly, but a pipe bursts over there, and your entire commercial enterprise just gets flooded. Welcome to this custom-tailored deep dive.
It's a terrifying thought.
It really is. And today's mission is all about that exact nightmare. We are looking at a highly insightful article from the Broker Times. It's titled "The High Money Lesson: A Sub-Aggregator Due Diligence Framework Every Principal Broker Needs by Q3 2026.
And honestly, even if you are not in the mortgage brokerage business, you really need to listen to this.
Oh, 100%. Because this is an absolute masterclass in structural risk. It explores how downstream liability works and exactly how you bulletproof your business against the actions of, independent contractors or partners operating under your corporate umbrella.
Because the reality of modern commerce is that very few businesses operate in silos anymore. I mean, we rely on networks, affiliates, sub-licensees.
Yeah, it's all interconnected.
Completely. And because of that, the regulatory and legal risks have fundamentally changed. You aren't just responsible for what you do anymore, you are responsible for what you allow to happen through your infrastructure.
Okay, let's unpack this. We have to start with the inciting incident, right? The catalyst that suddenly exposed this massive hidden risk in the financial industry and just put everyone on edge.
The wake-up call.
Right. We're talking about a major federal court injunction from May 15th involving a company called Finsure and a group called High Money.
Yeah, so to understand why this specific case sent shockwaves through the industry, we really have to look at the relationship between these two entities. Finsure is what's known as a head aggregator.
Like the main hub.
Exactly. Think of them as the main hub that holds the primary license and connects all these mortgage brokers to big banks and lenders. Now, High Money is a sub-aggregator.
So they operate underneath them.
Right, they operate a network of independent brokers under Finsure's broader umbrella. So on May 15th, an interim injunction was granted that basically froze Finsure from pressing the eject button. They were actively trying to terminate their entire commercial agreement with High Money.
And the crucial fact here, the detail that makes every business owner's jaw drop, honestly, is that High Money itself, like its corporate leadership, was not personally accused of any misconduct.
None at all. The
Nope.
allegations of misconduct sit entirely with individual brokers operating downstream within High Money's network. Specifically, brokers tied to something the authorities are calling the Penthouse Syndicate.
The Penthouse Syndicate, which, I mean, sounds like a terrible straight-to-DVD heist movie starring Nicolas Cage.
It does have that ring to it.
But the numbers are incredibly real and, frankly, incredibly serious. We are talking about a matter involving more than 25 charged individuals.
Yeah, it's massive.
The New South Wales Crime Commission has stepped in, and there are roughly $95 million in restrained assets.
It's a staggering level of alleged financial crime. And from a legal and structural standpoint, this is why this case matters so much to you, the listener. It is not about fraud at the top of the organization.
Right.
It's about contractual exposure. Head aggregators like Finsure are looking at their networks and drawing a really hard line. If there are systemic failures in how a sub-aggregator supervises its downstream people, the head hub considers that grounds to terminate the entire agreement.
So the liability just flows straight up the chain.
Exactly. The risk is infectious.
But I have to push back here because I'm putting myself in the shoes of a business owner, and this feels like, well, it's like a landlord getting their entire property seized and permanently shut down by the government because a tenant subletter was secretly running an illegal casino in the basement.
That's a great analogy, actually.
Is it really fair or even legally sound that a business's entire commercial relationship can be destroyed over conduct they didn't personally engage in? I mean, they didn't spin the roulette wheel?
Well, contracts don't really care about what feels fair. Almost all aggregator agreements, and frankly, most franchise or vendor agreements across any industry, contain explicit indemnity and termination clauses.
Just baked right in.
It is. They are written specifically to allow the head entity to sever ties for breaches committed by individual authorized credit representatives down the line. Because the head aggregators hold the ultimate regulatory risk with the government, their lawyers draft the contracts to give them a massive eject button.
Right, if the people downstream are creating exposure. So if your subletter runs a casino, the contract says the landlord gets evicted. That's brutal. But this high money case is just the match, right?
Oh, absolutely. Just the spark.
Yeah, from what I read, there's a much bigger fire spreading across the industry that's setting up this Q3 2026 deadline.
Right. If we connect this to the bigger picture, you start to see why this isolated lawsuit is turning into an industry-wide crisis. The regulator, ASIC, is currently conducting a massive best interests duty, or BID, review.
And they aren't just sitting in an office theorizing, are they?
No, not at all. They are actively looking under the hoods of six national aggregators to see exactly what their supervision frameworks look like in practice. Mm. Whatever standard ASIC decides is necessary for the massive national hubs, those hubs are going to instantly force downstream onto every principal broker and sub-aggregator.
Here's where it gets really interesting. ASIC is breathing down everyone's necks with these new reviews, but what makes that terrifying is the technological Wild West we are suddenly operating in.
The AI factor.
Yes. The article mentions Commonwealth Bank, CBA, self-reporting a $1 billion exposure to suspected fraud. And this isn't someone using whiteout on a W-2. This involves highly sophisticated AI-generated documents. How is AI actually doing this?
The mechanism of this AI fraud is exactly what has lenders so terrified right now. We are talking about generative AI that doesn't just, you know, fake a number. It flawlessly matches the font kerning of a specific bank's official statements.
Wow.
It generates synthetic multi-month transaction histories that balance perfectly down to the cent, making it look like a borrower has a legitimate high-paying job.
And you just can't catch it.
You really can't catch it with the naked eye. In response, OSTRAC, the government's financial intelligence agency, has called in 10 different lenders to start actively pooling and sharing their fraud data. They are building a cross-referencing network to look at the metadata of these applications.
To tighten scrutiny on exactly where this business is coming from.
Exactly.
So if intent doesn't matter anymore, and there is highly sophisticated AI out there right now generating completely flawless fake payslips, I mean, how can any principal broker possibly defend themselves? We aren't mind readers.
No, you aren't.
And we aren't digital forensics experts. So how do you fight an algorithm that creates perfect lies?
Well, you fight technological fraud with systemic process. The ASIC review we mentioned earlier confirmed a pretty brutal reality for business owners. Documentation, not intent, is the ultimate unit of compliance.
Documentation.
Yes. It really doesn't matter if you genuinely believed your contractors were acting ethically. We have officially shifted from an environment of innocent until proven guilty to liable unless documented otherwise.
Liable unless documented otherwise. That is a huge shift.
It is. The only defense against a flawless AI document is proving you had a rigorous documented system of supervision in place before that document was ever submitted.
Which brings us to the blueprint for survival outlined in the article. Since we can't outthink an AI just by squinting at a PDF, we need a system. The article details a comprehensive due diligence framework that principal brokers must implement. And it starts right at the front door with onboarding.
Yeah, the front door is where a lot of business owners make their first critical mistake. They assume that because the head aggregator vetted a new independent contractor, they don't need to do it themselves.
They just trust the hub.
Right. But the framework demands that you maintain your own distinct files. You need an ASIC criminal history check, a bankruptcy search, evidence of lender accreditation, and signed acknowledgments of your specific file standards.
And references too, right?
Yes. Most importantly, you need references from two prior employers or aggregators, complete with documented call notes.
Call notes, meaning you actually have to pick up the phone. It makes sense, though. It's kind of like buying a used car. Relying on the head aggregator's vetting is like assuming a used car is mechanically perfect just because the dealership ran it through a car wash so it looks shiny. You still have to look under the hood yourself.
That is the perfect way to look at it, because the head aggregator is vetting that individual for commercial criteria, like can they write loans? Do they have a pulse?
Right.
Okay. You, as the principal broker, are vetting them for regulatory exposure.
Yeah.
That is a much narrower, much more personal risk to your specific license.
Okay, so that gets them in the door safely. But once they are in, the framework requires ongoing supervision. The article mentions a monthly sampling of at least 10% of submitted files with written findings, plus quarterly one-on-one reviews.
The routine maintenance.
Yeah, but I've got to ask, is pulling a random 10% of files really enough to catch a sophisticated syndicate member using AI? Or is this just administrative theater to create a nice little paper trail to keep ASIC happy?
Honestly, if you stop there, it is just administrative theater. 10% won't catch a needle in a haystack if the needle is deliberately hiding in the 90% you aren't looking at.
Right.
But that monthly sampling isn't designed to catch the masterminds. It's routine maintenance. It builds a defensible 6-month log for the regulator. It shows you caught small errors and coached people in writing.
Oh, I see. So it's about establishing the baseline habit.
Exactly.
Yeah.
To actually catch the coordinated AI syndicates, you have to pair that routine maintenance with an early warning radar.
The advanced pattern detection, this is the part that fascinated me. Because you aren't just looking at individual files anymore, you're zooming out. So what does a suspicious pattern actually look like? Are we talking about the same zip code, or is it deeper than that?
It is much deeper. What's fascinating here is you are looking for specific cross-pollinated anomalies. You look for geographic clusters, yes, but you also look for the repeat use of the exact same valuers or accountants across completely unrelated borrowers.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And you look for document metadata anomalies. Imagine 3 different clients who don't know each other having payslips created by the exact same software version down to the second.
That would be a huge red flag.
Exactly. You also look for unexplained cash deposits in the 8 weeks right before an application and unusually high cashback offers being run by one specific broker compared to their peers.
It's like being a casino pit boss watching for card counters. A pit boss doesn't kick someone out for winning one big lucky bet. I mean, that happens. They watch the rhythm.
Exactly.
They look for the cluster of behavior, how the player changes their bet sizing relative to the cards dealt. It's the pattern that proves the scheme, not the single isolated event.
Exactly the right framing. None of those patterns prove guilt in isolation. I mean, a broker might just genuinely have a lot of legitimate clients in one suburb, but together, those specific anomalies form the exact profile that OSTRAC and lender fraud teams now automatically flag in their systems. As a principal, your job is to detect that pattern and intervene before you get an investigation notice from a lender. You have to catch the card counter before the casino security taps you both on the shoulder.
Which leads to the final and apparently the trickiest part of the framework, offboarding.
Yes.
When you find the card counter, or even if someone just leaves voluntarily, how do you get them out of your house? The article says this is the phase handled worst by most brokerages. But why? Offboarding seems like pure administrative housekeeping.
Well, human nature kicks in. When a business relationship ends, especially if it ends badly or abruptly under suspicion, people just want to wash their hands and walk away.
Right, they just want it over with.
Exactly, they stop doing the paperwork. But think about the downstream liability we talked about. The framework requires strict data privacy controls for file transfers, a formal closing letter confirming post-termination obligations, and resolving the trailbook accounting.
Let's pause on that jargon for a second. The article mentions trailbook accounting and clawback letters. What do those actually mean in plain English, and how do they protect you?
Great question. A trailbook refers to the ongoing, recurring commissions paid out over the life of a loan that was previously closed. A clawback is when a lender demands that commission back because the loan defaulted or was refinanced too early.
Oh, I see.
So if you don't do the accounting to explicitly document who owns that ongoing money and who is responsible for those future clawbacks when a contractor leaves, you are leaving a massive financial time bomb in your business.
A time bomb? That's terrifying.
And furthermore, if a regulator raises a question 2 years from now about a file written by a broker who left your network, your entire defense rests on the paper trail of how you managed their exit and secured their client's data.
Because if you didn't do the housekeeping,
you are standing there without evidence. And without documentation, you are liable.
Liable unless documented otherwise. It all comes back to that.
Okay, we've covered a lot of heavy ground here. From the $95 million penthouse syndicate, to the mechanics of AI fraud, to pattern detection. Let's bring this down to reality for the listener. What is the immediate action plan? If our listener is managing a network or acting as a principal, what do they need to do this week to avoid disaster? The article has a very clear immediate directive. Go into your filing system today and pull 3 specific documents. First, your head aggregator agreement. Read the termination and indemnity clauses. Know exactly where your partner's eject button is.
Okay, that's step one.
Second, pull every single contract you have with your independent contractors. You must ensure those downstream contracts perfectly mirror the obligations the head aggregator imposes on you. If the aggregator requires a 48-hour notice for a regulatory breach, your contractors need to be bound by that exact same 48-hour rule.
And really, even if you aren't a mortgage broker, this applies to you. If you run a franchise, or you use vendors, or you have any sort of subcontractor network, you need to pull your master contracts and make sure your subcontracts mirror those liability clauses. You literally cannot afford to have a gap in the chain.
That is a vital point. And the third document you need to pull is your supervision log. Confirm you actually have 12 months of consistent, documented 10% sampling activity.
The routine maintenance.
Yes. If any of those three things are missing, out of date or inconsistent, you fix them right now, this week. The rest of the framework, you know, the advanced pattern detection, the offboarding checklist, you can build that out over the next 60 to 90 days. But those three documents are your immediate survival gear.
So what does this all mean? Beyond just not getting sued or shut down by a regulator, there's a commercial angle here, right? We can actually turn compliance from a cost center into a competitive advantage.
Absolutely. The strategic reality is that aggregator selection is becoming a two-way street. Aggregators are under massive pressure from ASIC to prove they have clean networks.
Right.
If you are a business owner who can walk into a partnership negotiation with a fully documented ASIC-ready supervision framework, you are a premium asset.
Yeah.
You become the safest bet in the casino. It makes your business vastly more attractive and valuable.
I love that. You aren't just building a shield, you're building a selling point.
It's the only way to survive the shift. But looking at all of this, the sheer volume of tracking, the metadata analysis, the AI-generated fraud, this raises an important question that really goes beyond just mortgage broking or any single industry.
What's on your mind?
If documentation, rather than intent, is now the undisputed measure of compliance, and we are operating in an era where AI is generating indistinguishable fraudulent documents, forcing us to rely on automated pattern detection to catch them, are we moving toward a future where our business relationships and our commercial liabilities are entirely governed by algorithms grading our supervision logs rather than human trust?
Wow.
And if so, what does that actually mean for the concept of a business partnership?
That really reframes the whole idea of building a network. You start a business thinking you're evaluating people, you know, looking them in the eye, shaking their hands, building a foundation of trust. But the ground has completely shifted. Your structural integrity doesn't rely on trust anymore. It relies on a paper trail that proves you never really trusted them in the first place.
You have to inspect the plumbing 3 blocks away every single month and write down exactly what you found. Otherwise, when the pipe bursts, it's your building that washes away. Something to seriously chew on as you look at your own contracts this week. Thanks for joining us on this deep dive. We'll catch you next time.